and we are the Nonprofits. I'm your non-spiritual guide, Dennis Lube, along with the non-obsequious Matt Dillahunty.
Yes.
The anti-totalitarian Kathleen O'Connor.
Hello.
The incautious Russell Glasser.
Blessings be upon you.
And the unspecific Thad Engling.
Greetings.
And we are coming to you live from the not inconsiderable Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on this day, the 1st of August, 2009. The non-sucky music you just heard was Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult. The Nonprofits is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a non-supernatural, non-profit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. You can learn more about the ACA by calling their non-invasive voicemail at 512-371-2911 or visiting their unholy website at www.atheist-community.org. The ACA hosts a non-destructive happy hour at the Dog and Duck here in Austin at 7 on Thursdays. The Nonprofits broadcast non-intuitively every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 Central Time. If you want to participate in the show, you can choose that time to join the Nonprofits chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So sit back and enjoy the non-conciliatory musings of the Nonprofits.
You know, when you skip a week, you shouldn't come back with a non-introduction.
I shouldn't, no. But since atheists are defined by what they aren't, I figured that would be appropriate.
Yes.
And it was a low-impact intro, so.
That intro needed more cowbell.
Probably.
I tried to give it just a little cowbell, but. So, it's been 2 weeks, even though we were going to do one last week in addition, and the schedule got messed up and things got shifted. And basically, my work schedule is just kicking my ass. It turns out that by a really strange and unusual coincidence that some might have deemed guidance from on high, I scheduled back in April a vacation, which happened to fall during the exact one-week period in which my real job would not have overloaded me.
Ah.
The 1 week where I could have probably sat around and checked email and, you know, screwed off and done a little testing, that's when I went on vacation. And the weeks before it were 50, 60, 70-hour weeks, and now I'm back to that.
Right.
But we're doing shows this weekend, and we're going to try to stay on schedule, even if it means I hire a maid to come in and clean the place before, since I don't have time.
Train the bird.
Yeah. Max will pick things up. He just won't put them where you want them. So, how's everybody been? We have, like, full house today.
Yeah.
We have...
And I haven't been here in a while.
Did you mention Dog and Duck in the non-introduction?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Quick note to those folks who are in Austin. Last Thursday, they actually had the happy hour at a different place.
It was an experiment.
It was an experiment. If it ends up moving there or somewhere else permanently, we'll announce it on both shows. But for now, we're sticking with Dog and Duck as at least the fallback until some decision is made. You know, when we kicked Schilling out and sent his sorry ass packing, which is not remotely what happened, and I miss you, buddy, there were at least some more people who were interested in possibly moving the happy hour. So we're experimenting, but odds are we'll be at Dog and Duck.
Well, I think I heard that the flying saucer was a little bit too loud.
That could be. See, the Dog and Duck isn't just, I mean, it really is kind of perfect.
Really? All right.
You know, there's a porch area. It's not too loud. You get nice weather out at night. You can go inside if you need to. There's a reason why we stuck with it this long. There's good food, good drinks, whatever. Also, the first Sunday of every month is the ACA lecture series, and tomorrow is the first Sunday of the month.
Ooh.
And Christine Comer will be doing the lecture, we had originally scheduled for, I think, June. And that'll be tomorrow at the Austin History Center, located at the corner of 9th and Guadalupe, beginning at about, well, you need to get there about noon when the doors open, and then we'll start somewhere between 12:15 and 12:30. I don't know if I have any other actual announcements.
Well,
I have one.
Do you? Oh, yes, you do. Kathleen, speak to us.
Well, just to let everyone know out there, that is the female listeners, there is a meeting tonight for the Dark Flow, which is affiliated with the ACA and is for women only. And it will be at Vino Vino starting at 5:30. Vino Vino is located, I believe, on Guadalupe, just south of 45th.
And if you come in and drag wearing a wig, they'll know.
Well,
so
what
don't
about
try.
The woman inside me struggling to get out? Should that...
Just send her.
Okay. Let her out. Yeah, you know, and I don't want to get into... It's not really ACA politics, but it is structured. I mean, we are a small nonprofit organization in Austin focused on promoting atheists in the Austin area, and yet that is one of our premier missions, and yet most of what we end up doing, nonprofits, atheist experience, bat crews, tend to involve anybody and everybody from everywhere. I mean, the show has more viewers outside of Austin than in. This show has listeners outside of Austin than in. And I'm not remotely complaining. We absolutely love the fact that people find value in what we do or appreciate it or enjoy, you know, masochistically listening to people that they'd like to despise, only to send us emails with explaining why we're wrong and why we're going to hell. Or whatever. Religious punishment their views happen to want to heap on people who don't believe. But it's often come up, and I get asked this a lot. When I was in Vegas, there were people from other atheist groups who asked questions about, you know, how did you start the group? Well, I didn't start the group. I had nothing to do with starting the ACA. That happened when I was still a Christian. By a newspaper ad. Now you have a lot more options about how to start. There's meetup groups and online, you know, discussion forums and Craigslist and all newspaper ads and anything you can think of to try and draw people in. And the next question, well, sometimes it's, should we become a 501c3 nonprofit organization? And I don't know. It depends on, you know, how many you have, what you're going to do, you know. You can just have a group that does whatever the group wants to do, which is generally how I try and let the ACA operate. I mean, yeah, I'm the president, but it's not like I run around saying, we're doing this and we're doing, you know. The people in the group, the community is the key word there. And they do whatever they want to do within reason, within, you know, the mission of the ACA. And I would encourage other people who are starting other groups locally to do things like that. Don't get an idea in your head that we are going to be a political group, and then you draw people in, and you, and the first group of people you draw in aren't necessarily that interested in being political, and so your group falls apart. Draw people in for whatever they want to be and whatever they want to do. If you have a group of people in your area that would just like to get together over coffee and have a discussion, or, you know, not feel like they're the ostracized sitting in a corner with their mouth shut all the time, and they want to get together with like-minded people, do that. And then when your group gets big enough to where there are pockets of interest in different areas, allow those areas to do their own thing.
Sure.
And you know, you're building a little network that's going to expand on its own. One of the things that we keep getting asked about is, we need to do more family events. And my answer is almost always the same. And that is, I'm not going to intentionally go out and do a family event in order to draw in families. We've done it before. It doesn't necessarily draw in families. What happens is families end up joining the ACA and participating in events. And then they say, why don't we do this? And they do. And then you get the family pocket of the group. Don't worry that it's going to schism out. And now we have Dark Flow, which is the more attractive portion of the ACA. I don't know, though. You say that it's women only. Have you guys gotten to a point where you discussed, you know, transgendered individuals and...
You know, we haven't. So maybe that will be the topic of discussion. In fact, I think I'm going to bring that discussion up tonight now.
It's, you know, I mean, we
based on what you just said, we should have first transgendered individuals first and let them decide to make their spinoff group.
But
that's another option.
This is an issue of who do you allow or into a group. I say that partly humorously, and we all kind of chuckled. I don't mean to do that. The transgendered issues are something I think ought to be addressed a whole lot more often, and in much greater detail than I'm qualified to talk about. So, on that note,
I'll let you know how the discussion goes.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing I'm interested in because you know this was so many. I hear one of the biggest complaints I hear about every atheist group is that it's just a sausage fest.
Too many dudes.
It's just a bunch of guys sitting around geeking out over whatever we want to geek out over, whether it be religion or video games or movies or monster trucks mm-hmm. or, you know.
Or magic.
Why, thank you. Why, thank you. Yes, some of us will geek out on that subject.
Magic.
See, now you got me thinking about other stuff. But, and now I've forgotten what I was talking about.
I don't know.
It doesn't matter. We have news items. We have stuff to get to.
That we were allowed to peacefully assemble, and we have.
I'm done talking. Let's get to business.
Yeah. All right. Do we want news?
Sure. Anybody heard about C Street?
Is that
C Street? It's a residence Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, C Street is the residence for several members of Congress in Washington, D.C. It is operated by a secretive religious organization called The Family.
So C stands for conspiracy. It's
probably,
conspiracy
or
street.
Corruption.
Corruption street.
Maybe. In Jeff Charlotte's novel, The Family, The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power, he describes C Street as a four-story red brick Washington townhouse. A former convent at 133 C Street, S.E., run by a family affiliate called the C Street Foundation. The C Street house is registered as a church, which allows it to avoid taxes. There's a house mother and a TV the size of a small movie screen, usually tuned to sports, and a prayer calendar in the kitchen that tells residents which demonic strongholds, such as Buddhism or Hinduism, they are to wage spiritual warfare against each day. Eight Christian college women do most of the serving, but we brothers were on occasion called to stand in for them, the better to find spiritual mentors. No one can fault members of Congress for desiring a private space wherein to discuss their occupational stress. However, when an organization straddles the line of conspiracy and secrecy, their constituency should be concerned. Governor Mark Sanford of South Carolina says he sought counseling at C Street during his extramarital affair with a woman from Argentina. Former Republican Congressman Chip Pickering's wife alleged in a lawsuit filed last week that Congressman Pickering actually engaged in his extramarital affair at the C Street house. Amid the allegations that C Street member Senator John Ensign, Republican from Nevada, funneled nearly $100,000 through his parents to his mistress and her family, are additional questions about the role his fellow C Street members have played with the fund distribution. The mistress's husband, Doug Hampton, says that the payments were suggested and directed by the other members of Congress who took up residence at C Street. So basically, this is a secret organization that's operating and seems to be sort of actively engaged in helping their members cover stuff up, basically saying that they hold each other accountable so that they don't have to be held accountable, like, by the voters or the law.
So just a question here. It starts by saying in Jeff Charlotte's novel.
Mm-hmm.
So what part of this is fiction?
This, and from what I've heard, that I'm not sure why they describe it as a novel. From what I've heard, this is an actual like undercover investigation where he went
well,
to
that makes
C Street.
Some more sense.
Yeah, actually, this may not have been the best written article. But you know, creepy.
It's what they do. Conservative Christians.
And yet we had to go form a daughter corporation just to be able to have a building.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you've got a religious nonprofit who it seems is just sitting there to launder money and cover up sex scandals.
Right. I mean, yeah, and they are,
oh, and
of
pray.
Course, register as a church, so they don't have to pay taxes, and they give the congresspeople, like, very cheap room and board.
Convenience.
And then they help cover up their illicit activities.
The author of this book was on Bill Maher last night, is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
That guy.
I didn't get a chance to watch.
I was watching him on Rachel Maddow a couple days ago.
This might be a good time. I mean, I don't know how much discussion there's going to be on this, but I want to address what I wrote about Bill Maher. And since this guy was on Bill Maher's show last mm-hmm. night, which I generally enjoy watching, even though we don't agree on everything, I made a blog post that was called Atheist Alliance International Epic Fail. And I'm going to skim read it here because the atheistexperience.blogspot.com doesn't have the readership that nonprofits reaches. And this is something that I think is potentially important for discussion, especially among atheists, and it's suited to the show. Atheist Alliance International will be giving this year's Richard Dawkins Award to Bill Maher. And some people, including me, are pretty annoyed. According to AAI, here's the description of the award. I have problems with the description of the award, too, which I think we may discuss. But the Richard Dawkins Award will be given every year to honor an outstanding atheist whose contributions raise public awareness of non-theistic life stance, who through writings, media, the arts, film, and or the stage, advocates increased scientific knowledge, who through work or by example teaches acceptance of the non-theist philosophy, and whose public posture mirrors the uncompromising non-theist life stance of Dr. Richard Dawkins. Mm. We'll hold off on picking apart the award language. I sent an email to Atheist Alliance International, and this is what I wrote. Setting aside his anti-science views on health and vaccination, I fail to see how Maher qualifies for the Richard Dawkins Award. He's repeatedly stated that he's not an atheist, implicitly or explicitly asserting that atheism is as dogmatic and irrational as the organized religion he rejects, while stating clearly that he believes in a God, but not religion. His movie, while funny and popular, did not treat the subject fairly and did not promote atheism, rational thought, or science. It was an amusing bit of let's poke fun at religious people. While I enjoyed it and recommended it, I would like to see more of it and even see the film awarded, Maher does not deserve the Richard Dawkins Award, and it is an embarrassment for a major atheist organization to honor him with this award. It cheapens the award, sullies the AAI's reputation, and is a slight to every outspoken atheist who continually strive to promote reason and non-theism. If the AAI had a number of different awards, I'd have no objection to Bill Maher receiving one for Best Movie. I'm in favor of that. I enjoyed Religious. I laughed. It was not done honestly. He used some of the same cheap tricks that we hammered the guys who made Expelled for lying to people about what you're doing in order to get the reactions you want, for potentially cheap editing. He's not a religious scholar. He's a comedian who I generally find funny. I enjoy his show. We agree on a number of different things, and there are areas where we disagree. But this is a quote from Bill Maher. I'm not an atheist. There's a really big difference between an atheist and someone who just doesn't believe in religion. Religion to me is a bureaucracy between man and God that I don't need, but I'm no atheist. No. I believe there's some force, if you want to call it God. I don't believe God is a single parent who writes books. I think that the people who think God wrote a book called the Bible are just childish. Religion is so childish. What they're fighting about in the Middle East, it's so childish. These myths, these silly little stories that they believe in fundamentally, that they take over this little space in Jerusalem where one guy flew up to heaven. No, no, this guy performed a sacrifice here 1,000 million years ago. It's like, who cares? What does that have to do with spirituality? Where are you really trying to get as a human being and as a soul moving in the universe? But I do believe in God, yes. When he was on The Daily Show promoting Religious, he stated that atheism, he's not an atheist because... It because he sees it as the mirror image of theism promoting a dogmatic certainty.
Blah.
Yeah.
The other stuff you said didn't really bother me so much, but that really bugged me.
What other stuff?
I mean, all the stuff about not being an atheist. I don't really have a problem with him getting the atheist award while being an atheist.
Except that the award states very specifically to honor an outstanding atheist.
Well, there's that.
That's step one.
That's pretty big.
The award is presented to an outstanding atheist. Here's somebody who's not only not an atheist, but one could say anti-atheist. It's awarded to somebody whose contributions raise public awareness of non-theist lifestands. He doesn't do that. Religious didn't do that.
I don't know. I'd say it does. I mean, he may not have wanted it to, but ridiculing all this religion does probably cause a lot of people to question the basic underlying assumptions. That may not have been what the movie was about, but I know that you and I as atheists both enjoyed the movie.
Okay. Third, advocates increased scientific knowledge.
Okay. No.
Yeah, he fails on that.
The guy's a nut job when it comes to health and vaccination. What science, what real science has he advocated and promoted? I'm not aware of it.
Nope.
Acceptance of non-theist life philosophy.
Again, unintentionally, maybe.
I don't think that making a movie that ridicules religious people promotes acceptance of a non-theistic life philosophy.
So do you think there's an ulterior motive for them nominating him? Is it just for publicity?
He made a popular movie, and they'd like to get him to come speak.
Expresses the dangers of religion, and by implication, says that a non-theistic culture would be better.
No, it says a non-religious culture.
Non-religious culture would be better. Yeah, okay, fine.
There's a difference between a non-theistic culture and a non-religious
culture.
Which
is too subtle for anyone to fucking care about.
Except me.
Well, you're exactly the typical non-theist.
That's right. You're subtle,
and
man.
Bill Maher, who explicitly pointed out that his objection is to organized religion as a bureaucracy that inhibits communication between men and God. He's advocating theism and denouncing religion.
Well, I think all of that...
That's not what I got from the movie.
But doesn't it specifically say that that the person is supposed to be an atheist? It seems that right there disqualifies him. And the other...
Yeah.
And I think that if someone like Bill Maher were to call into the show, as they often do, and say, like, hey, guys, I love your show. I agree with a lot of what you say, but I just don't agree with organized religion. I still think there's a God, though. We would home right in on that statement and start arguing with him as for all we're worth.
Yeah. I don't think this is a niggling little point that nobody cares about. I think it's a point that a lot of people perhaps don't realize and don't care about. But to me, it's crucial. And when you have an organization like Atheist Alliance International giving out an award that amounts to Atheist of the Year.
Yeah, to a non-atheist. Okay,
to a non-atheist who represents anti-atheist, pro-theist, anti-religion views. I have an objection to it. I think, that, you know, granted, I don't know who the other potential candidates were. And, you know, guys like Thunderfoot, who we'll talk about in a little bit, through their work on YouTube, have certainly qualified, although Thunderfoot describes himself as a pluralist. But I have all kinds of objections to the actual award.
I think the word pluralist is used as a subset of atheism, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
It stands for physical evidence, reason, logic.
Yeah.
Right. To specify that he's not only an atheist, but like not a Raelian, you know.
But he also shies away from the atheist term. But I'm not here to hammer anybody for that. Use whatever term you're comfortable with. I'm not sitting here as the Pope of atheism saying this is the way it needs to be. I'm just talking about this award, what they say it's for. And who they've given it to, I got to object. But I also have objections to the wording in the award. And other people have pointed out similar things. this thing about whose public posture mirrors the uncompromising non-theist life stance of Dr. Richard Dawkins. Okay, if you're going to have an award and name it after somebody, you have to tie it to him in some sense.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't really have a huge objection to that, except that when it comes to portraying to the general public atheists, atheism, etc., this couldn't be viewed as an implicit endorsement of the claims of theists who would say things like, well, you guys are just little, you know, Dawkins wannabes.
Yeah, I don't want an atheist pope. I don't want it to be you or Richard Dawkins.
I don't want one at all. And if offered the job, I'd fucking turn it down.
I mean, I'm reminded of the scene in Life of Brian, you know, you don't need a leader. You can think for yourselves. Yes, we can think for ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to be emperor of the galaxy. I don't want to be atheist pope. It's not a huge issue. It's not a huge issue. Bill Maher is, by and large, on the side of the vocal atheists in their movement against religion. But guess what? So is Reverend Barry Lynn.
Right.
Reverend Barry Lynn, a Christian, who is the head of America's United for Separation of Church and State, is right there with us. I'm not giving him an Atheist of the Year award.
And so is the author of that blog about Left Behind series. What do you call it? There's a blog I read regularly which ridicules the Left Behind series, and I enjoy the hell out of it, but the author is a Christian, and occasionally he'll just interject a post about Christian love that makes me want to hurl.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't mean to sidetrack this into...
That's it.
Slacktivist.
Excellent blog, annoying views on Christianity, but still, he generally a guy on our side. I wouldn't give him an award for being a great atheist.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is I could go out and hang out with Barry Lander, Slacktivist. We could agree on things. We could work together towards common goals, and I could do the same thing with Bill Maher. And yet none of them are what I would consider to be deserving of, you know, the atheist. I mean, look at the past recipients of this award, where you've got James Randi and Ian Hersia Lee. Come on. Now, granted, they gave it to Penn and Teller, and
they're atheists, right?
Yeah, and I adore them, but not everybody does, and certainly they have this libertarian bent that we won't go on about at the moment.
Not this week.
But it's there's a collection of people who received this award that gave it a certain level of esteem. And I think that is gone with this particular recipient.
I have a question. So he's been nominated. Does that mean he has...
No, he's got it.
Oh, he's got it. Okay. So it's a done deal. He's accepted it. Well,
unless he turns it down or they change their mind, but he's announced as their main speaker and recipient of the RDA at the convention in October.
Right. It'll be interesting to see what he says.
Yeah, it would kind of serve them right if he went up there and said, I accept this award even though I'm not an atheist. And I think that atheists are just as dogmatic and close-minded.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he says.
Yeah. And... And I think we'll have a good discussion in October.
Yeah.
But anyway, I just wanted to hit that real quick because that subject came up several times over the last week. And granted, I'm in complete agreement with P.C. Myers on the issue that, you know, there is no atheist pope or whatever. And, hey, if that's who Atheist Alliance International wants to give an award to and that's who they've made their determination, that's their business. I completely agree. And I'm allowed to voice my dissent.
Right.
And as the ACA is an affiliate of Atheist Alliance International, I'm not questioning our affiliation with them. It's not like I'm saying, oh, you guys gave this to some, you know, dickhead, so we're going to pull out. That's not the point at all. It would, however, though, be interesting, as I have never received any sort of communication from Atheist Alliance International with regard to this award. I don't know that there's any kind of inclusion of affiliates in nominating people. I mean, granted, it was not a year where any nominees leapt to mind, although I think there are certainly some posthumous nominations we could make.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it just kind of takes away from the meaningfulness of the award. It seems now Bill Maher's got it, so, you know, it kind of...
It does to
demeans
me.
It a little bit, maybe, or diminishes.
Yeah,
well, it certainly opens the field.
Yeah, and that's
maybe not in a good way.
Part of the issue. I mean, somebody said that this is roughly the equivalent of giving Jenny McCarthy an award for, you know, science education. I mean, evidently Bill Maher is right in there with them on the anti-vax stuff. I can't hear you when your mic is...
I'm sorry, I didn't know that. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. I linked to another blog post where his anti-vax views and his health views are discussed in great detail. The reason I didn't hammer on that in my post is that other people had done it, and that I didn't feel that that was the critical element. For example, if Jenny McCarthy made a great movie promoting...
Let us fantasize.
Yes.
If that were possibly to happen.
You know, a great movie that promoted atheism, and there was some award for making a great movie that promoted atheism, and hers was the best, then I think she should get the award, even if she's a complete nut job and on anti-vax with views that are killing people. But when you have a generalized award right. like this, I think you have to take those things into account. I mean, if I was Richard Dawkins, granted he has nothing to do with the award other than that his name is on there. If this were the Russell Glasser Award, and you found out that they were giving it to Bill Maher,
would
you have written a letter to Atheist Alliance International saying, "Hey, I don't think you got this right"?
Sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm bucking.
So, Richard, if you're listening.
He's already commented on it.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Not in detail. He wasn't aware of...
Does he have an opinion on them using his name without really... Did they get permission?
I don't know.
Oh, you want to read more about C Street. Okay.
I remember when we were talking about what is C Street standard... stand for. It reminded me of why I miss Schilling, because he would have come up with another C word. But
I'm sure.
So this is just another section from Russell's previous story that I thought would be interesting for people. So Todd Tyert, am I too quiet? Is that what you were signaling? Sorry. Todd Tyert, Republican, Kansas. I don't know how to pronounce that last name. I'm going to pronounce it Tart.
Good choice.
Tart also sort of had sex in the brain, but of a different sort. He was very concerned with the number of babies Muslims are having, and he said Americans are killing too many of their babies while Muslims are having too many.
Oh,
and we need to
that.
Have more babies and outlaw abortion so that we can win the race with the Muslims.
Wow.
Proving the underlying theme of Idiocracy, I might add.
Yeah.
I need to read
Damn.
That.
Oh, and I missed this quote, which is apparently a big thing with them. Doug Coe, the leader of the family, said, "That's fine as far as it goes." Oh, wait. Yeah, that's fine as far as it goes, but it doesn't go far enough. "I want you to think bigger. I want you to think of Jesus plus nothing." A phrase that they mean to suggest that something that they call the totalitarianism of Christ. No, really.
Wow.
As role models for this sort of totalitarianism, I mean, you know, this group is basically centered around, you know, helping people get in power, because it's like it's a conservative organization. It's anti any kind of social safety net for the poor, for instance.
Sure.
So what they say is that the natural order of things is that good, godly men should get power. And then those men should, you know, dispense their money, their wealth to the masses as they choose. And then Co says, like the mafia, look at the strength of their bonds. Actually, favorably comparing his group to the mafia. Oh, and okay. Hitler. Wait, no, seriously, this is a self-invocation of Godwin's law. Look at Hitler, he said. there's not the full quote here. I mean, you know, there's more.
We need the full quote on that one. Yeah, damn, I'm afraid I want to so, hear that.
But I mean, I have heard the author of this book go on at greater length about this Hitler quote.
So,
because
the opinion expressed by that guy about the, you know, we have to win the race against the Muslims, that sounds very extreme. I have personally known a fair number of people who have that kind of opinion about the reason that they have many children.
We have to outpopulate them.
Have you guys seen the movie Idiocracy?
Yes, I mentioned it a minute ago.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, so premise of that movie, which I think is completely flawed, but premise of the movie is that stupid people breed faster than smart people, like these people in the family who are talking about having as many kids as possible to outpopulate the Muslims. And so, you know, and the smart people are the ones who are like concerned about overpopulation and, you know, limit the number of kids they can they have. And so over time, society all becomes stupider. The reason I think it's invalid is because when it comes to intelligence, I think that meme population is more important than gene population.
Mm. It's also contradicted by the fact that IQ scores on IQ testing have gone up by, I think it's 3 points a decade over the last 50 years or so.
Is that because they're lowering the standards in the
tests? No, they've actually had to make the tests a bit more difficult to try to keep the number, the average, at 100.
Well, I hope that's true.
You can check up on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would give me a glimmer of hope, because as silly as the movie Idiocracy is,
it is
its
unsettling.
Premise is unsettling,
But, you know, people in every generation say, like, oh, kids today, it's much worse than it ever was before.
So I'm gonna interrupt for a second.
Okay.
Because I just checked the chat room, and there's this discussion going on about the Dark Flow group.
What? You mean people participating in the show?
No, people arguing with each other.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going to turn it into show participation. Oh, yeah. Since Kathleen is here, would you like to tell us, because there's some discussion about why on earth would you have a women's subgroup and this assumption that women
sexism.
Just want to hang out with women, et cetera. Tell us about Dark Flow and why it exists and why you think it's valuable.
Well, I'm not the person who created the group. I'm only a participant. But from what I understand, it's just a chance for some women to come together and meet and discuss a variety of topics. Why is it just women, I guess? I can't answer that since I didn't form the group. But I have participated in a couple of meetings, and I enjoy the camaraderie that's developing, and I enjoy meeting other women who have the same belief systems, or lack thereof, actually, that I do. So, what are they arguing about?
I haven't had a chance
validity?
To read it all. And Schilling's taking care of it, and so is microbiology.
Oh, good. Schilling's your spokesperson.
It's probably this exclusivity that's tearing our culture apart, you know?
Well, I think there was some concern over, you know, why form a separate group? I mean, from my point of view, Lisa suggested that, you know, that one way to make women more comfortable was to at least offer this. This isn't like we're taking the ACA women and shoving them over in a separate little group.
No, they're
but
still
equal.
Commingling. It's just a chance for women to come together with other women.
Yeah. Hey, guess what? Sometimes just the guys go out, too. We didn't.
In fact, most of the time, but it's not official.
Yeah, we haven't bothered to form a group or give it a name because when we say, "Hey, does anybody want to go do such and such?" the only people whose hands go up are the guys, so we're the ones that go.
And yeah, I think you're right. It is a little bit less intimidating for women who are just starting to get involved with the atheist community here in Austin. This gives them a chance to meet some of the women and become friends with them.
So. And the unfortunate reality, this has come up more than once, and I've talked about it with people in other groups as well. The reality of our culture is such that as an atheist, people would say, well, would you have a problem dating somebody, a theist? And I don't see myself doing that. Because in building a relationship, I want one that's built on respect. Mm-hmm. And there's a core belief that I cannot respect, cannot understand. Now, I'm not saying it's impossible. There may be some theist woman out there that would work. But what it does is, as this kind of ostracized, very small minority, the dating pool is limited. Mm-hmm. And when you have a group that has a bunch of guys at events, and a good chunk of them are single, and let's say there's 6, 8, 10 guys, and a woman shows up, that can be very uncomfortable the first time, at least, for the woman who shows up, because there's attention directed, mm-hmm. and it's not intentional. It's not usually anybody trying to be rude.
Right.
It's not usually somebody saying, ooh, the new girl showed up, let's hit on her. But it does create an atmosphere that can be disquieting to some people.
And so giving
people an opportunity. And by the way, this isn't just about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, because obviously you've got women who are attracted to women, men who are attracted to men. The sexual dynamic isn't the only thing. But the fact of the matter is, I hate to tell everybody this, there is a difference between, there are differences between men and women. Sorry. Yeah. Welcome to the real world. We are different beings. On occasion, we think. Now, this isn't lumping everybody into one bucket, so don't get your panties or your boxers in a twist. But there are actual differences. And, you know, sometimes there are some women who are more comfortable hanging out with guys. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Kathleen is in that because she's stuck in a room with four of us.
We're never going to see her again.
That's right. There are men who are more comfortable hanging out with women. There are straight people who are more comfortable hanging out with homosexuals, and there are homosexuals who are more comfortable hanging out with straight people. Find whatever niche is yours. But giving people the opportunity to have those niches available for them.
I agree. It's like, who? I don't know who's getting, you know, upset about it, but my question would be, why do you care, really?
Yeah.
We are allowed to peaceably assemble.
Yes.
Right. It's fun. I enjoy it.
Whatever groups we wish.
I don't get to go to as many of the meetings as I would like, but I always enjoy seeing the women and talking with them, and it's fun.
Plus, they don't ever tell us what goes on at those meetings, so I never know.
We talk about all of you.
Yeah, they're organizing a coup.
And the when ACA they go to the bathroom, the whole table gets up. Sorry. Now she's
You're
definitely
going to non-existent hell for that one.
No, I loved that. That was awesome. All right, what's the next one?
All right. Well,
Dennis.
Let's see. Did y'all talk about Francis Collins?
Oh, I have an actual editorial by Sam Harris about
it. I brought that too.
Yes, there is.
Yeah, huh?
Okay. I brought
well, let Kathleen go
thing.
Since she brought it too.
All right, go for it.
Well, okay. I can
Dennis
go.
Dennis brought it up first.
That's true. Let's let Dennis talk about it.
I just have P.Z. Meyer's take on the thing.
Probably.
His article.
Okay.
The thing was, the strongest part of apparently Sam Harris's essay was the quotes from a talk by Collins, which are pretty insane. Do you want to read those?
If you have them,
I've got them right here.
Go for it.
From, let's see, the strongest part of the essay, in my opinion, is that Sam Harris directly quotes Collins' own words, and they are not encouraging. Most specifically, he includes the text of slides from a talk Collins gave at UC Berkeley in 2008. And I was kind of shocked at this. This guy is a scientist, and I'm going, what the hell? So, slide one. Almighty God, who's not limited in space or time, created the universe 13.7 billion years ago with its parameters precisely tuned to allow the development of complexity over long periods of time. How does he know that? Slide two. God's plan included the mechanism of evolution to create the marvelous diversity of living things on our planet. Most especially, that creative plan included human beings. So he's going for directed evolution? Slide three. After evolution had prepared a sufficiently advanced house, the human brain, God gifted humanity with the knowledge of good and evil, the moral law, with free will, and with an immortal soul. Whoa! Where is all this shit coming from? And slide four, we humans used our free will to break the moral law, leading to our estrangement from God. For Christians, Jesus is the solution to that estrangement.
Sounds like God fucked up in step three, where he was supposedly giving them the knowledge of evil. I mean,
and slide five, if the moral law is just a side effect of evolution, then there is no such thing as good or evil. It's all an illusion. We've been hoodwinked. Are there any of us, especially the strong atheists, really prepared to live our lives within that worldview?
Well, yes, that's why they're strong atheists.
This is a scientist? There's not even a grasp of basic logic here. Nothing.
Well,
what the fuck?
You'll notice that he chooses positions that are maximally compatible with existing science. I mean, they're the kind of science that are like intelligent design, even though he's not really a friend of intelligent design. But, you know, the things that can't really be disproven based on known science. Like, you know, 13.7 billion years ago, and he used evolution and blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, none of this can be backed up by any actual facts.
Right, or logic. That's the problem. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like...
This was disconcerting to me as well. We talked about this last time a little bit.
Right,
and I really
and
didn't
you
have...
guys didn't...
A lot of
agree with me
that
this
time.
Appointment was a
well,
problem.
I didn't have a lot of information at that time.
Yeah,
that's what I said.
Wow.
But yeah, this was disturbing to read.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I can
only imagine the rest of what Harris wrote. I haven't actually read the darn thing. I need to do that.
Well,
but
let me
it's
go
like,
read
he's,
what
he's,
Sam
Harris is really good.
Let me read what Sam Harris says immediately after that.
Please.
He says, "Why should Dr. Collins' beliefs be of concern? There's an epidemic of scientific ignorance in the United States. Yep. This isn't surprising, as very few scientific truths are self-evident, and many of them are counterintuitive. It is by no means obvious that empty space has structure, or that we share a common ancestor with both the housefly and the banana. It can be difficult to think like a scientist, but few things make thinking like a scientist more difficult than religion. Dr. Collins has written that science makes belief in God intensely plausible. The Big Bang, the fine-tuning of nature's constants, the emergence of complex life, the effectiveness of mathematics all suggest the existence of a loving, logical, and consistent God. But when challenged with alternative accounts of these phenomena, or with evidence that suggests that God might be unloving, illogical, inconsistent, or indeed absent, Dr. Collins will say that God stands outside of nature, and thus science cannot address the questions of his existence at all."
Yeah, it's armor it against any criticism.
Yeah. I actually have the opposite view of Collins, not surprisingly. But when he says that science makes belief in God intensely plausible, no way.
No.
I mean, people were believing in God for thousands of years before science came along. Now, obviously, since Collins and people like him exist, science hasn't really ruled out the possibility of God. But it has undermined it. I mean,
right.
I think that overall faith in God was stronger before there was a better understanding of the way the universe works.
And I agree. And yet I disagree with Sam Harris.
Okay.
And I disagree that this is anything to be concerned about. Or that there's anything significant to be concerned about.
All right.
I almost see this as a bit of quote mining in the sense that Francis Collins has written a book, and he talks about his faith, and he does these things on occasion, and you tailor what you're talking about to your audience. So it doesn't surprise me at all that he's given a discussion where he uses slides to talk about God creating the universe 13.7 billion years ago, because that's what he believes. He is convinced by arguments from
waterfalls
design, the improbability of things occurring without intervention, that there must then be some intervention. He is not alone. This is perhaps one of the most commonly represented theological views among scientifically educated individuals. And yet, nothing that Sam Harris has pointed out, or that anybody else has pointed out, has in any way demonstrated that his science is bad, or that his decision-making about what science to do and what science gets funded is in any way bad or diminished by the fact that he is a Christian. Yes, he is outspoken. And if, as director for NIH, he decides to use that as a pulpit, that is objectionable because that's a church-state separation violation. But look through the past NIH directors. I'm sure that many of them, if not the vast majority, we're also believers and believers.
Yes, but not evangelizers necessarily.
Fine. But he's allowed to fucking evangelize until he takes that job. If he evangelizes from that job, then you have an objection. But you don't have an objection beforehand, because as far as I've been able to suss out, his science, what his beliefs are, aren't science minus, they're science plus. He accepts science. He accepts scientific standards, the rigors of research. His science has been good. The science that he advocates, the solutions that he advocates, the real practical solutions. Is he going to be directing cancer research to seek out prayer? There's absolutely no indication that anything like that is likely to happen. And I think, I'm not saying that people are saying, oh my gosh, there's a Christian, we can't let a Christian be. No, they are more concerned about the fact that he has publicly been evangelizing.
Right.
However, if he's willing to stop that and separate it from his duties.
I would say that since he has evangelized, since he has used his position of authority to evangelize in the past, I would think the default position is that until proven otherwise, he's not going
to
stop.
What position of authority did he use to evangelize?
His credentials as a scientist.
Yeah, that's credentials. That's not a position.
That's what I was talking about.
Okay. Here's my problem. Slide 5.
Yes.
If the moral law is just a side effect of evolution, then there's no such thing as good or evil. It's all an illusion. We've been hoodwinked. Are there any of us, especially the strong atheist, really prepared to live our lives within that worldview? This implies he does not agree with evolution.
No, it doesn't. Read it again, and I'll pause at different points.
If the moral law is just a side effect of evolution, then there is no such thing as good or evil.
Okay, what does that have to do with whether or not he accepts biological evolutionary theory? His objection there is about morals, and he's absolutely correct.
No.
Okay.
So what he's saying, though, you're saying is that he acknowledges biological evolution, but he's not willing to say that morality is a byproduct of evolution.
His objection,
to him, morality comes from God.
Yes. His objection that he's launching in slide 5 is the same thing we've addressed a million times before, and that is, if there isn't a divine God just handing out a moral law, then it is arbitrary. He's correct. I'm fine with it being arbitrary. We are the arbiters.
No, he didn't just say it's arbitrary. He said there's no such thing as good or evil.
And I agree.
And I don't agree.
And his last thing, we've been hoodwinked, and especially the long days, are we prepared to live with that worldview? He's saying he does not agree with that worldview.
I know he doesn't agree with that worldview, but what the fuck's that have to do with his science?
Well, just for context, this was a talk that was given at...
The implication that you're making is that somebody who has religious beliefs... What? I'll let you get to it. Is that somebody who has religious beliefs that a moral... That there is a God who determines morality cannot do good science. And
no,
that is
that's
fundamental,
not what I'm saying. Because,
I'm talking to Dennis.
Right. Yeah, right. Okay. Well...
And yet,
if
his
he
record.
Doesn't agree our morals come from evolution, then what?
Morals have nothing to do with science. Morals have nothing to do with scientific research. Morals have nothing to do. Well, bioethics, I'll set that aside. But the origin of morals are not a practical concern when conducting scientific research. What about his science is wrong? I know we don't agree with his religious views.
Wow. Okay.
Where you think you get your morality from is.
Evolution.
Okay.
And he doesn't agree with that.
So what? Okay. You think your morality comes from evolution. I think that's wow. not necessarily true. However, what you mean when you're talking about that isn't, it doesn't have anything to do with biological evolution. You're talking about cultural evolution.
Well, but
this is the former head of the Human Genome Project, who has stated clearly that even if there was no fossil record, DNA evidence alone would be sufficient to confirm common ancestry. When Harris attacks him with things about talking about how flies and humans are related, Collins would be one of the first people to raise his hand and say, yeah, they are. And I've said it before. Where he thinks he gets his morals from, how is that relevant? Matter of fact, take two people. This person thinks their morals come from God. This person thinks their morals come through a natural process with humans as the arbiter, with change over generations.
Right.
And yet they hold the same moral values. Does it matter at all where they think that origin comes from when they go to apply those values? And does that have anything
Wait a minute,
to do...
You're shifting yes. the frame of the argument. You're saying it shouldn't matter to them as a moral judge, but we were talking about Francis Collins' qualification as basically the head of the most important scientific organization in the country.
And I'm saying that those are two different things.
Yes, but, I mean, there's no point in talking about him as a moral judge when his qualifications about science are an issue.
That's my point.
Okay.
My point is that it is irrelevant what his view is about where his morals come from when we are discussing whether or not he is qualified to be the director of the NIH and whether or not he should be the director of the NIH. What the fuck does the NIH have to do with public policy regarding where your morals come from? Because to say anything else is to imply that somebody who is a Christian could not do the job. And
no,
I think
again, I'm going to correct you on that. It's not somebody who is a Christian.
Sorry.
It's somebody who has been an outspoken Christian evangelist type.
Okay. And I think that's also fucking false.
Okay.
Somebody who has been an outspoken Christian evangelist does not disqualify them from a position in science.
I think it casts serious doubts on their dedication to actual scientific method.
I completely agree, and you guys are expressing those doubts. And my response to that is, okay, let's look at those doubts. And the doubts are, can he do the job? Well, let's see how he's done the job in the past. Can anybody present anything that demonstrates that he has let his religion affect how he does science? Nobody's done that. Sam Harris hasn't done that. P.Z. Myers didn't do that. Nobody here's done it. I'm not a Francis Collins worshiper. I'd rather the job had went to somebody else. But on grounds of who's qualified and can they do the job and is there good reason to think that they couldn't do the job or is there good reason to think that they would abuse this position, I have seen nothing that leads me to think that Francis Collins should be disqualified on any of those grounds. All I see is people saying, oh, he's been evangelizing for God and look at this thing that he says where God created the universe 13.7 billion years ago. Okay.
So he's been sworn – he hasn't been sworn in or anything. He's just been nominated at this point. Is that correct?
Yeah, and he'll be confirmed. I don't even know if this is Senate confirmable, but I think it's unlikely that he wouldn't be confirmed.
I mean, it describes it's an appointment, right?
How is it anti-science to talk about things?
Almighty God! As soon as you say those words with no fucking evidence, you're anti-science.
No, you're not.
Yes, you are.
No,
you fucking well are.
No, you're not. That's why I said that Collins' position is not science minus; it's science plus.
It's science despite. He's a scientist despite being a Christian evangelist.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
He's a scientist.
Yes. Despite. Meaning that Christian evangelistic non-science bullshit is in his head. It's compartmentalized, and we better hope it stays fucking compartmentalized.
When you say he's a scientist, despite what you're saying, that despite having these beliefs, it has not in any way prevented him from doing science.
Right. My concern it has not in any way prevented him
from accepting any valid scientific hypothesis. He is expounding about things that transcend what science understands. And yes, we disagree with him. And yes, I don't think that his position on those theological questions are supported by reason or evidence. But guess what? Neither does he.
Yeah, we better hope. Okay.
We don't have to hope. It's right there in his words. Now, I mean,
my concern about, like, the intelligent design movement, which tries not to be overtly anti-science, is that they just say, okay, we just want to allow for this, you know, scientific possibility that Magic Man done it.
Yeah.
The problem with inserting Magic Man as a part of your basic belief systems is that it's essentially lazy. It encourages people to stop looking for real answers.
Yeah.
To say, okay, Magic Man goes here. Other people can go find out the answers without me, so I can go ahead being a scientist despite that.
Yeah.
But
the objection that we have to
would you be okay with, like, Michael Behe being appointed to this position?
Yes.
Jeez.
Michael Behe clearly allows his religion to get in the way of science.
Now, that you may be able to make a better case against Behe. I'm talking about just on principle. I haven't looked at this from Behe. Here's the thing. When you launch an objection against intelligent design for trying to add to science.
Yeah, I know that's he's not an intelligent design guy.
No. You are talking about intelligent design. You're talking about what is being advocated. Mm-hmm. The director of the NIH, there's no evidence that they have advocated or will advocate the injection of their religious beliefs into their science. And until somebody presents that, I think this is a lot of hand-waving and fear-mongering that does us more harm than good. Because it makes us look like bitter little people who don't want somebody who happens to be outspoken about their religious beliefs doing a job that they're qualified to do. We can't attack him on his credentials. We can't attack him on his science. And so we're going to attack him because when he wasn't doing this job, he was outspoken that in addition to all the things about science that he accepts, he also accepts Magic Man done it.
It hasn't happened. It sounds like his religion has not influenced his science yet, but I think that's what the concern is, that it may. So we don't know at this point, but I do have a question.
Yes.
What does anyone know what his stance is on stem cell research?
No, no.
That's a good question. We can Google.
Yeah, but that'll be a lot of dead air.
Go ahead.
I'm not even sure what the NIH does, to be honest.
But we know his stance on evolution.
Well, it would still be interesting to know, because that is a topic where...
Yeah, that is a topic where religion has an undue amount of influence over science.
Well, from Wikipedia, the National Institute of Health is an agency in the United States Department of Health and Human Services and is the primary agency of the U.S. government responsible for biomedical and health-related research. Now, if he has anti-science positions that are relevant to that, then those are points worth raising.
Okay.
But I haven't, and I'm looking while we're talking about this, but I haven't heard that from anybody, and it wasn't in Sam Harris's thing.
That's true.
And that's my objection. If this guy has religiously based views or moral objections to specific types of research that Kathleen raised as a possibility, those are things that we deserve to know. Those are things that are relevant to whether or not he can do the job. And those are relevant criteria upon which to evaluate him for that position. The fact that he has a belief in a God, that he's expressed this, I don't see that those are valid objections at all.
Well, okay, what...
Concern,
what is the science that discusses the evolution of altruism and...
Evolutionary psychology.
According to Sloan Feig, he says he has the answer to that, and it's God.
He's expressed his belief. There is no scientific consensus answer. This isn't... we're talking about lab work. The fact that he holds a different view on something that is, I don't know, is relevant as far as I can tell to medical research. I mean, I'm not a fan of it. I agree it's a point of concern. And I'm not, like I said before, I'd rather that the job went to other people. I'd rather that all of these jobs went to people who consistently demonstrated the highest principles of rational thought, who absolutely refused to believe anything as true without sufficient evidence to support it. However, there are big questions that don't have simple pat answers that cannot be or have not been resolved by scientific inquiry and investigation. And when we talk about morals, that's one of them. We have ideas. We have good evidence about how things happen. And I don't think, and I'd have, maybe we'll see about getting a call or an email to Francis Collins on the subject. But from what I've read of his work, he would not have any objections at all to what evolutionary psychology has to say about the formation of human values. He's not an idiot. And by the way, there could be a God. I don't think that's the case, and I don't think there's any good reason to think it's likely. But his position is that all of this has occurred naturally, and there's a God. And so the fact that you and I value different things is in part due to the fact that we're humans who have evolved
into
what?
No. He's saying that the moral law didn't occur naturally. He's saying it's not a product of evolution.
Slide 3 says, after evolution had prepared a sufficiently advanced house, the human brain, God gifted humanity with the knowledge of good and evil, the moral law.
Yes.
With free will and with an immortal soul.
Yeah.
So why would he give evolutionary psychology any money?
Okay. Wow.
I'm not sure.
Sorry. First of all, I don't know that the NIH has anything to do
giving evolutionary psychology money. I'm just saying.
But
you're saying.
But I have your answer. And you guys, this is. Francis Collins is talking about things in one set of terms, and you guys are using those terms in a different way, and you're not seeing the big picture. What he says in slide 3 is that evolution prepared up to a human body, gave it a brain, which is a house, which God then instilled good and evil, etc. But what evolutionary psychology studies with regard to human morality is what occurred after that, and there's no reason for him to object to the fact that changes...
I think you're full of shit.
No. I mean, I don't know how much you've read on evolutionary psychology, but evolutionary psychology is all about how processes of the brain lead to the things that we call morality.
Yeah, it just studies morality in monkeys, birds, everything.
Yeah, but I think what Matt is saying is that God went ahead and put that in before it could be studied and analyzed. So, I mean, Collins could say that, well, God put the morals in before... You know.
But he says he put it in exclusively in humans, which contradicts research that animals behave in the same social ways.
Where's the word exclusively? I didn't see that.
What?
Where's the word exclusively?
Well, after evolution had prepared a sufficiently advanced house, the human brain, God gifted humanity with the knowledge of good and evil.
God gifted humanity. Where does he say that that's the only thing that God did? Or the only
you're splitting hairs.
I'm trying to get Collins to agree
with this position.
I'm trying to get you to understand how these fuckers think.
I know how these fuckers think. They don't think morality is in animals.
You know that Francis Collins doesn't think that animals have anything akin to morality.
I think that to attribute this position to him is as bad as going through and trying to weed out so-called context from the Bible. That really says that Jephthah even didn't actually kill his daughter, despite the fact that it says it did. I mean, you know, it's trying to massage the words to come up with the most favorable possible interpretation of it.
Yes, which is how somebody who is a good, qualified scientist, who accepts scientific positions, manages to rationalize their religion.
That is what they have to do to reconcile the two positions. And that is why there are quotes from Collins there, and why Sam Harris hits him on this, that when pressed on these things, Collins repeatedly points out that what he's talking about is something that transcends the ability that we have to investigate it. This is what I'm trying to say. None of us here agree with his views on this.
Right. Sure.
But you guys, and not just you, others as well, look at things that he says and amplify it to be some all-encompassing statement that is so contrary to science that there is no reconciliation. What I'm saying is that for him, there is a reconciliation. It's not rational. He'd probably want to be one of the first people that would admit that. He would probably think that he has a largely plausible position based on his understanding of the universe. But to take his words and then inject additional emphasis on them, to say that he's made these all-encompassing statements that, and by the way, morality, ethics, by the way, can be viewed as human-to-human interactions. And what we witness in animals, other animals, could also be viewed as moral-like behavior. That we are looking at things in such a way that there is a different category for the ability to perceive one's actions and its consequences, etc. There's almost no denying
as
that
a
while we see,
as a science fiction
see,
fan,
while we see behavior in other animals that we can now recognize as altruism, as caring, as loving. This is not even in debate anymore. That there is still a distinct difference between those. Now, I don't happen to think that difference is so distinct. But people like Francis Collins do. They have rationalized a position where humans are in a separate category because we are so much better. It's like we constantly point out, you know, is the cheetah better designed because it can run faster? You know, does that mean that some god specifically designed the cheetah? That we are picking the criteria upon which we want to judge, and he's judging on morality and free will.
And I think that putting humans in an entirely distinct category from other animals is contrary to evolution inherently.
I disagree, because you've done it again.
Okay.
You've taken a position and expanded it to be all-encompassing. It would be wrong to put humans in a separate category from other animals in every category, but not to pick one and say that we excel here, and we are therefore distinct. It may not be the proper way. It may be more beneficial to view all of them as a similar category. But to say that it is wrong under all circumstances to place humans in a different category is asinine. You're gonna put somebody in jail for killing a fly? Well, we have to if we're gonna put them all in the same lump. There are distinctions that we make and we draw all the time, and I don't think that the fact that he has managed to rationalize is a distinction that we necessarily disagree with makes him anti-science. He's not making a distinction between the physiological aspects of humans from other animals. He knows DNA. He's the head of the Human Genome Project. He's the one who's pointed out common ancestry from DNA evidence alone. He's not making distinctions on those grounds. He's making distinctions on this one. And there, we can probably all say, you know, I don't agree with you. You're wrong. But it has that distinction has nothing to do, that I can tell, with his ability to do science or determine what research gets money.
I don't know. I view, you know, a compartmentalization of this magnitude as, you know, just, yeah, as a firefighter on the clock, but off the clock, he's lighting fires. You know, it's like, it's just weird. We'll find out. We'll see. If nothing bad happens,
yeah,
then
I mean, it does remain to be seen, and I think that it would be fair to, like, throw out an "I warned you" if it happens in the future.
No, I don't. I've already conceded that his past actions are a valid concern.
Okay.
But they're not disqualifying, is the only thing I'm saying. If we went around...
I'm not even sure that any of us have said that it's disqualifying exactly. I think that the concern is that this was not a very good choice. I mean, I don't feel like Francis Collins obviously can't head any scientific program. I just think that an appointment like this is a statement about what kind of person you want in this job, what kind of things the administration values when it comes to science. And I think it was an extremely bad choice.
Okay.
I don't think he's disqualified. I just don't think that he's...
Why was it a bad choice?
Do we have to go over the entire last half hour again?
No, just a single sentence. Why was it a bad choice? If you were to pick somebody, ignoring their religious beliefs, mm-hmm. head of Human Genome Project, what is it about him that you don't think would make him a good choice to head the NIH?
I think his religious beliefs are too openly mixed up with his science opinions.
And I think you're violating the First Amendment by implying
I'm not violating the First Amendment. Well, I'm not censoring him. I'm just saying that they could have picked somebody better.
How about his gullibility?
Better.
He sees a frozen waterfall and
he's free to talk about the waterfall all he damn well wants.
Okay.
He's free to apply for this position. It's just that I wish that whoever picked him for the head of this thing would exercise better judgment.
Okay. I asked why you didn't think he was the best choice, and your answer had to do with religion. If you were interviewing somebody for a job and they were otherwise qualified, and you decided that they weren't the best choice because you disagreed with their religious views, you don't think you'd violated anything?
If their religious views were extremely public and directly negated the kind of work that they were trying to do.
And where's the demonstration that that's the case? That's all I'm saying. If there was a demonstration, I would completely agree with everything that was said. I'd rather he wasn't the choice. I'm talking about the reaction to his choice. That's my only issue. Is the reaction to his choice is a bunch of people running around saying, oh my gosh, he's an outspoken Christian evangelist, and he has these ideas that we don't agree with about God and origins and morality, and nobody's tied that to performing the job.
Well, do you think there could have been a better choice?
Yeah.
Well, then.
I have a question.
Well, then what? I think there could probably be a better choice for all kinds of
obviously,
things.
Obviously, then you have some objections to him as well.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
I don't
have objections.
No. You asked if I thought there could be a better choice. Yes, I think there could be a better choice. I have no idea who it is because I'm not privy to
the
people.
Sure.
I think that there could always be a better choice. When you have your nominee for a job, now we're talking about reasons for essentially disqualification. The fact that he wouldn't be my choice doesn't mean he's not a good choice. Doesn't mean he's not a qualified choice. Asking whether or not I think there's a better choice doesn't really matter. I think there was a better choice for president. But
so if I raise an objection, I mean he should be disqualified? What the hell?
What does he think about stem cell research? I see you've got a page up there.
Well, I have a question. What if instead of God, he worshipped Thor? Would that make a difference?
I don't think so. Not to this room, I don't think.
Well, Matt, if he proclaimed that he worshipped Thor and he was still head of the Genome Project, he still was doing or has done the science he has done. But he is a follower of Thor.
Somebody would have to demonstrate that being a follower of Thor had some effect on his performance of the job. I mean that's just. I mean, to me, this is the crux of it. I mean, that's just a matter of law. That we are free to believe what we want and express those beliefs. This is why I'm talking about First Amendment stuff here. And if we were to be disqualified for a job or considered a lesser choice for a job that we were otherwise qualified to do because the person who did the choosing determined that our particular religious views were not acceptable, and that there may be some risk that they cannot identify of some problem in the future, I'd be fucking taking him to court. If I was ever up, if I had his credentials, his scientific credentials, and was up for the NIH position, and somebody there, some asshat, decided to say, yeah, but he's an outspoken atheist who thinks religion is for the gullible, we'd be in fucking court right now.
It's different, though.
Why?
Because he is going to be the head of an organization that's based on science and being able to examine physical evidence and come to conclusions. And religion is the opposite of that. So here is somebody who's a scientist who advocates research, who advocates the scientific method, except in this one place in his life.
So it's
almost contradictory. I don't think anybody wants...
Let's say that some independent group, Templeton Foundation, for example, had done some studies on prayer that seemed, that the initial data seemed to show that prayer had an effect. And yet the head of the NIH, me, an outspoken atheist and skeptic, reviewed that research and without finding any problems with it, decided I'm not going to give funding to that because it's prayer. I'd have a huge problem with that.
Absolutely.
And so, anybody who disqualified me on the assumption that I might do that or do something like that is disqualifying me for the same exact reason that that people are objecting to Francis Collins. You can make the two cases equal. My only concern is, does that person follow the rigors of science? Are they going to apply it wholeheartedly to the task?
And I think that's the point. Is he going to do that? And there is some question because he's not doing it in other parts of his life.
Yeah, but the other parts of his life don't matter. How many scientists go to church? Are they exercising science in that part of their life? They're not, but that doesn't have anything to do with whether or not they're doing their jobs and doing them well. I think if somebody could come up with a really good reason, then there'd be an objection. But when the one and only answer is, I'm worried that his religious views may affect his job performance, or I'm worried that he might take this new position and abuse it in order to encourage religious views. When he does that, we have a mechanism in place to remove him for that. And that's when I and other people will be ranting and raving to get him fucking removed from office.
It's a lot harder to remove somebody from office than to just not hire them in the first place, though.
Yeah, but you're starting to tread on preemptively punishing someone for something that they haven't done yet.
No, that's true.
Did you find anything on stem cell?
On stem cell research, in 2006, he was asked, and he said, stem cells have been discussed for 10 years, and yet I fear much of the discussion has been more heat than light. First of all, I believe that the product of a sperm and egg, which is the first cell that goes on to develop a human being, deserves considerable moral consequences. This is an entity that ultimately becomes a human. So I would oppose the idea of creating embryos by mixing sperm and egg together and then experimenting on the outcome of that purely to understand research questions. On the other hand, there are hundreds of thousands of such embryos in freezers, all in vitro fertilization clinics. In the process of in vitro fertilization, you will almost invariably end up with more embryos than you can reimplant safely. The plausibility of those ever being reimplanted in the future, more than a few of them, is extremely low. Is it more ethical to leave them in those freezers forever or throw them away? Is it more ethical to come up with some sort of use for those embryos that could help people? I think that's not been widely discussed. He basically gave a non-answer.
It was a little inconsistent, but it was not bad.
And also, it has been widely discussed.
True.
And there's a couple other comments.
Because if you're really concerned about the moral standing of those sperms, then you should just oppose in vitro fertilization to begin with.
Right. That's the duplicitous position that a lot of these people seem to be in. He answered the question on a couple other different occasions, talking about the very promising embryonic stem cell research might potentially provide remarkable cures for those disorders. We don't know that, but it might. At the same time, many people feel, I think justifiably, this type of research is taking liberties with the notion of the sanctity of human life by manipulating cells derived from human embryo. Ugh. I'm not a fan of what he has to say here, and I think it's fairly noncommittal. And that is... I would like to see, as a part of his vetting process, is he in favor of or opposed to new stem cell lines? Is he, as director of NIH, going to do anything to discourage or encourage research in those areas? In a lot of cases, his hands are tied by the law already.
Right.
So it's not a super issue until the law gets changed. Anyway.
Well, that was enlightening.
Yeah.
Well, I have a pretty funny story.
I'm going to set a Google News
alert
on Francis Collins, and we'll keep an eye on him. That's all I can say.
So, it's been almost an hour and a half.
Wow.
Been over an hour. Oh, wait.
Chewed up on it.
But, you know, I'm sure somebody out there is like, my God, would they stop talking about this? Hell, there's a person in the chat room like that. And some of us have felt like that at different times during the discussion. I loved it. Maybe I'm sick and twisted, but I think this is important. And in much the same way that I have no idea if I changed anybody's mind or if anybody changed my mind, I have a different perspective on it slightly than I did before. But God, if you can't have discussions about stuff like this.
Oh, yeah. Always fun.
What fucking good is it? Let's just throw up our hands, okay?
This is what I was looking forward to when I was invited to come here.
You know, I frequently have to explain to theists who show up at something like the Ask an Atheist list. I wrote a private message last week to somebody who's showed up there and gotten pounced all over. And I said to her, look, don't take it personally. This is just the way, I don't want to say all atheists, but this is the way we act.
The way we roll.
We get into these kinds of heated arguments because we're enthusiastic about them. Mm-hmm. So.
Awesome.
Anyway.
Good news?
I have Harry Potter to catch soon.
Feds can seize Dinosaur Adventureland. Federal judge has cleared the way for the government seizure of a creationist theme park in Pensacola. Oh.
Wait, is that Kent Hovind's theme park?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
A ruling this week says the 9 properties that make up Dinosaur Adventureland and 2 bank accounts associated with the park will be used to satisfy a $430,000 in restitution owed to the federal government. No taxes.
Since we're coming down to the end of time, there's one thing that I want to hit real quick because
the end
have
times?
We have an
I actually have an article on the signs of the end times that are approaching.
Cool.
We have an international audience, and we have a lot of fans in Ireland, and this is something that isn't getting a lot of press in the United States, and it was sent to me several times. So I'm going to blaze through this just so people are aware of it.
Blaze away.
We talked about it briefly before. Ireland now has passed the blasphemy law.
That's right.
Oh, no.
The bill passed by a single vote on July 10th. This attack on free speech, I'm going to read the article rather than try to paraphrase it.
Sure.
Debated for several months in Europe, has gone largely unnoticed in the American press. The text of the legislation is provided at the end of this post. How does this impact free speech? Just don't be rude. Atheists can be prosecuted for saying God is imaginary. That causes outrage. Pagans can be prosecuted for saying they left Christianity because God is violent and bloodthirsty, promoting genocide or promotes genocide and slavery. Christians can be prosecuted for saying that Allah is a moon god, or for drawing a picture of Muhammad, or for saying that Islam is a violent religion which breeds terrorists. Jews can be prosecuted for saying Jesus isn't the Messiah. Ireland's blasphemy bill not only criminalizes free speech, it also gives the police the authority to confiscate anything deemed blasphemous. They may enter and search any premises with force if needed upon reasonable suspicion that such materials are present.
Whoa.
The local Freethinker Society with its copy of Hitchens' God Is Not Great, the video store with copies of The God Who Wasn't There, the history teacher who uses the dark side of Christian history to teach her class, the library with its collection of books deemed blasphemous, even the homeowner who lets the wrong person know he has a copy of Salman Rushdie's The Satanic Verses, could find his door broken in by the thought police, his bookshelves ransacked, and his books burning in the front yard. Although I don't think they're actually allowed to burn them.
Yeah, probably not.
Satirizing religion in any way, shape, or form, if it causes outrage, is now a prosecutable offense in Ireland. Saying anything negative about religion, if it causes outrage, can now be prosecuted as a crime, just like in Muslim countries. Witness the return of the Dark Ages.
Oh, boy. So if I can say a couple words to our Irish listeners, I know that America has a bad reputation, but, you know, it's getting better. You guys are welcome to come hang out, and we love your accents.
All right.
Ah.
And while it was a toss-up, I'm going to give Kathleen the last word.
Yes, please.
Well, actually, I have a couple of choices. If you guys want to hear about ads tout religion and government.
I like that one.
Or Mexico drug cartel with its own Bible?
The ads is funnier.
Okay, I'll go with that one. All right, a Hillsboro public policy group whose Christian platform included a push for a state ban on gay marriage has embraced a new attack on an old target, the separation of church and state. 10 billboard advertisements against what activist Terry Kemple called the separation lie, quote, are being put up across Pinellas and Hillsboro counties. 7 or 8 of the billboard messages are already in place, and the rest will be by the end of the week, Kemble said. The message is explained on www.noseparation.org is that America's government was made only for people who are moral and religious. The Judeo-Christian foundation that the founding fathers established when America began is the reason that this country has prospered for 200-plus years, said Kemple, president and sole employee of the local Community Issues Council, which paid for the website. The billboards showcase quotes from early American leaders like John Adams, James Madison, and Benjamin Franklin. Most of the quotes portray a national need for Christian governance. Others carry the same message, but with fictional attribution, as with one billboard citing George Washington for the quote, "It is impossible to rightly govern the world without God and the Bible." Turn page.
Yeah, okay.
I don't believe there's a document in Washington's handwriting that has those words in that specific form, Kemble said. However, if you look at Washington's quotes, including his farewell address about the place of religion in the political sphere, there's no question he could have said those exact words.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to put up a billboard in his state saying, like, sex with children is great.
No,
Kemple.
Lying is just fine. Yes. Kemple. Yes. I don't think there's anything where he actually said those words, you can tell by reading what he has said.
That's what he meant.
Yeah. I bet he said those words, maybe not in that order or in the same sentence, but he said them.
Well, former Secretary of State Catherine Harris, while campaigning for the Senate in 2006, called separation of church and state a lie we have been told, adding that God is the one who chooses our rulers. More recently, Christian separation critics have scoffed at President Barack Obama's assertion in April that Americans do not consider ourselves a Christian nation or a Jewish nation or a Muslim nation.
And yet God chose our leaders.
Right.
Our leaders who saddled us with separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, Kemple and Smith were beginning to plan for the billboards. I don't think it's coincidental, Kemple said. I think God has his hand in it.
Of course. How convenient.
God made me make that stuff up.
We believe that God chose our leaders and that some of our leaders just got it wrong when they tried to remove God.
Well, I think this really exemplifies the logic behind, you know, well, they didn't say it, but they probably would have said it, which is probably how, you know, a lot of the Bible
was written. The anti-separation of church and state movement is filled with people making shit up and put it and slapping the founding father's name on it.
Yeah. Jesus said the United States is his country. Yeah. He might not have actually said that, but that's what he meant.
If English was good enough for Jesus, it's good enough for us. God. These people.
Lying for Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dennis.
How they roll.
As you bore the brunt of my ire... You win today's prize, which is you get to read the closing comments.
I never win.
I know. But Dennis writes them, so he was going to eat. It's a rigged election.
Yeah. I read what I gets to. I gets to read what I write is basically the deal here. Well, that was our unrehearsed show, and we hope you weren't displeased. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another insensitive episode. Until then, I'm Dennis LeBay with Matt Dillahunty.
See you then.
Kathleen O'Connor.
Bye-bye.
Russell Glasser.
So long.
And Thad Engling.
Goodbye.
And we're leaving you with Don't Fear the Reaper by Blue Oyster Cult.